This is the MagicWordPodcast.com.
Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com. I want to thank all of you listeners for returning each week to hear these episodes, but I also want to thank and welcome our new listeners. I know that we have new people who are joining us every week, and they may not quite understand the format. We are approaching our 11th year of podcasting with over 670 episodes and conversations with well over 1,000 magicians, when you count those dozens a day we talk to during the magic conventions. So let me be uncharacteristically brief by restating my mission statement. These podcast episodes are intended to be recordings of magician friends talking about our craft, our art, and our lives. It is what I like to call conversations with conjurers. For the most part, probably 80% of my guests are friends with whom I have worked or known for decades. Some guests are new to me and may have come because of listener suggestions, or sometimes from outside agencies who have new authors or filmmakers that have something of interest to share with our community. In addition to weekly episodes, I also give daily updates from the floor of magic conventions, where I chat with the talent, organizers, dealers, and registrants. I want to give everyone the flavor of the events, whether or not they are in attendance. It also marks and reports on who did what and when during a point in time. And that brings me to a major point of this podcast. It is intended to be a window on time, where I talk with people about what they are doing right now. Over the years, their goals and their work and their situations may change, but some of the truths that they share are constant and timeless. I could go back and revisit with some who have been previous guests, but I try to move on forward because there are still thousands who I really want to have on this podcast. We often talk about marketing, theory, developing an act and a character, theaters, and more. The topics are as broad as our community is rich. We cover all forms and interests in magic, whether it is close-up, stand-up, stage, mentalism, birthday parties, collecting, creating, building, magic history, bizarre magic, or whatever. We also talk with experts in their fields in every type of venue, from church basements and fraternal organization luncheons to Las Vegas stages, trade shows, and cruise ships. Those who have been guests include all the greats and some who are not yet great. Some who have passed away, and some who are still creating and performing today. But I'm honored to be just a reporter in time who shares with our international community all the rich textures that make up our rich tapestry that we call magic. I hope you will continue to join me each week as we share these stories from so many magicians. And if you are just joining, remember that you can access many more episodes from our archives and also use our search engine by just typing in the name of the person or subject that interests you. Unfortunately, many of the podcast providers only carry the most recent 100 episodes, but there are so many more that you might have missed over the years that it is important to view our archives page. We have so many that I often have to refresh the archives page because even my hosting server cannot handle all the immense library. So if you are missing something or someone, then first try the search engine or just drop me a line at scott@themagicwordpodcast.com. And if you subscribe to our pod letter, I give suggestions from the archives, complete with links in every issue. Thanks for your time and attention, but now let's get on with this week's guest. This week, we have someone who is another longtime friend of mine, and someone who's done a little bit of everything, and he's someone also who it seems like luck finds him, but luck is something, again, that happens whenever opportunities meet preparation, and he seems to be always prepared for whatever that next step might be and wherever it's going to be taking him, so it seems like he's just living a charmed life, the way that one thing kind of lines up after another, and he has worked in Disney World in Florida, as well as doing a lot of trade shows. And he also had not one, but two magic theaters going simultaneously in Florida, both of which are no longer there. But again, going back and looking through that window in time, I did talk with him some years ago when Wizards was still open. And if you go to the podcast archives, you can then search and find that about theaters and hear me talk to him about that theater that was open at the time. And also, he, as someone during COVID, when we were under lockdown, came up with some kind of cool ideas, thinking, okay, what can I do to remain sane and do something creative? And he developed this Bar Bet box of bets, if you will, or tricks. And so he talks a little bit about that then too. So this is a fascinating conversation, and it might seem we're kind of all over the board, but he does whatever it takes to get it done. And that's why it may seem like a charmed life, but again, you got to be prepared when those opportunities present themselves, and he has. So please welcome my friend this week, Mr. Eric Olson, here on The Magic Word. Today we are in sunny Florida, the state of Florida here in the U.S., and we are near the hometown where my guest today resides, and we happen to be in Lakeland, which is near Orlando, which is actually near Kissimmee, getting around eventually to where my guest is, someone, and it's kind of funny because I've been in Florida while he was in Texas. He was doing a trade show in my hometown back in Houston, and so we were kind of trading places. Well, together we got together, today we got together finally, and somebody who has got a lot of really cool ideas and things with some bar bets, and we'll talk a little bit about that, and also he is the proprietor of what was Wizards, and we'll talk a bit about that theater then also from Kissimmee, a trade show magician, a little bit of everything, someone I've been wanting to talk to for a long time. Very entertaining fella, as well as being extremely handsome. Please welcome my guest then today, Mr. Eric Olson.
Yes, I love, Scott, when you read the cue cards about the handsome. I had to keep pointing it to you, like this part. This part's the most important. Don't worry about the rest.
Right. Get to that. So did I read it properly?
Yes, you did. Exactly.
Good thing you printed, since kids can't read in cursive today. You know?
No, not my kids. They're like, what does that say from Grandma? Don't worry, you got $20 in the card, kids.
That's right.
Don't worry what it says.
Would you ever do shows like for kids? I know you do family shows.
You know what? I've done everything. I know this new generation, I feel, goes from close-up to stage. I don't know about you, but I felt like our generation was, you had to start out in the birthday party market. You did birthday parties, then you might graduate to finally one person wants you for their adult party, and then it spawns off from there. But yeah, I used to do kid shows for years. Mm-hmm. In fact, I actually, believe it or not, I keep a small kid's case in my car.
Do you?
Just because there's been, and it might happen once every couple of years, but it has happened where I'm even at a corporate event, and they'll go, hey, just so you know, we weren't going to have the kids, but now we have another room. Would it be possible if we gave you a little more money? Could you go do something for just a little bit in that room? And I got a little briefcase, and I keep it in there. It's just enough stuff for maybe about 30 minutes if I ever need it. Yeah, never leaves the car.
Wow. And it's exclusively for kids at a certain age. I know that's another thing. I know in talking with David Kay, Silly Billy, where he talks about the way the kids will react differently if they are between this age and this age. And then another thing as far as some kids, as they get older and in teens, they're going to think, oh, too cool for school and whatever. So do you understand and subscribe to that philosophy and understand the differences on how that you would entertain those kids?
Yeah. Well, if I still did permanent kid shows, I probably would have probably almost three different style shows.
That's what I was wondering.
Yes, yes. But this one is pretty good as far as if it's all little kids, you know, there's at least something in there for them. It's not for little kids, but, you know, there's still a SpongeBob, they still have a hat tear, stuff like that in the case that any age could appreciate. And if you have a few little older mixed, you can still do your card to pocket and that kind of material because the kids will react with the people on stage. So I feel you can push the boundaries sometimes, as long as you're fun and entertaining on your adult material, you know, tricks. I wouldn't say adult material, but with the
for
kids.
Adults,
yes, for adults. So you can sprinkle a little of that in there. But my show's a basic, my little case show is a little, you know, standard family show that I'm sure everybody's stuff that everybody's done for years, you know, nothing
right.
New and creative, you know, nest of wands, all that kind of stuff.
But you kind of move on again from that. And again, that as you have aged, you are getting more and more into the corporate market. As I look at you, you look like Dr. Strange with a little bit of
gray,
a little bit of gray just in the temples, exactly where it should be. So this way, it's like, I will trust this man if he says, I've been to the far reaches of India or someplace and I bring you this great mystery of a rope.
It's funny you brought that up. I was just talking to David Penn from England about that.
Yeah.
And I was working on a new routine, and he goes, you know what, you're finally to the age where you could do that routine because of the little bit of gray and stuff. You know, if I would have tried it, you know, 20 years ago, nobody's going to buy that I've been here, there, or anywhere. And I think it helps the trade show market too.
Precisely. That was what I was getting at. Whenever you're going to be trade shows, that you have an executive look.
Yes.
And I think that's important that you do look like that as opposed to someone who is going to be, You know how to dress, I guess is what I'm saying.
Yes.
For not just success, but dress for your market. Sometimes I still have seen some people who are trying to get in the trade show market, and they haven't really advanced from the birthday party, and they're still kind of got loud jackets or
yes, I see that a lot. And even if it's not even a loud jacket, I still get disappointed when I see the guy who's got the suit off the rack where the sleeves are hanging down over his, you know, onto his wrist, and they're a little bigger, and because they didn't have it just that simple, just take it to a tailor, spend the $50-$100 to make it fit you right. And that can make a big difference alone, looking better behind a trade show floor.
You know, talking about that very thing, I remember years ago talking to Terry Seabrook, and he was, we were together, and I was saying, hey, look, they're having a sale, a warehouse sale at the Tuxedo Shop, Al's Formal Wear or someplace. They do this like annual sale in Houston. I said, let's go down to the warehouse. And he said, no, I'm not interested, you know, in buying tuxedos, particularly just because it's a good deal. He said, I prefer to have Bond Street clothing tailored to me and having a good looking suit. And so my point is, I think your audience also can see and tell the difference if you have an Armani as opposed to something that is Germani.
Right. Yes. and you don't need 100 suits. I mean, it's nice to have several once you get more and more working, because you have to change it up if you're working a lot of weeks. But if you get one good suit, one real expensive pair of shoes, that took me a long time to get over that hump, because I thought shoes were shoes.
No.
And since I have my one pair of shoes that I have, you know, made in Italy, They're ox blood, and I get more compliments when I walk to the booth. People are like, those are some nice shoes, and those are some nice shoes.
People notice shoes.
They do. I didn't realize that.
No, they do. Men and women, both.
It took me a long time to realize that. It was one of the things I'm glad I finally jumped on that shoe bandwagon.
And if you're on stage, I think they notice that even more, because they're looking at your overall look, and your shoes help complement that.
Yes.
And but the fact you're behind a booth, you're not seeing this, but soon you walk out of it, they're still going to see that. And I think not only your suit says something about you, but your shoes say something about you.
Yes. And I think it's worth spending the money eventually too, on a nice watch. Those are the things that pop when you're moving around, your hands are moving, people notice it.
So would you change watches? In other words, instead of an Apple Watch, which is popular,
people would wear? Yes, I never wear that.
Really? So you'd wear like a Rolex or something?
A Breitling, yes. I took one of my big trade show monies and I said, this is the watch I'm going to buy. Mm-hmm. And my wife goes, it totally makes sense.
Is that your everyday watch, or you just wear it when you're at shows?
No, only for corporate events. It comes out for trade shows and corporate events. I'm too afraid anywhere else, any other time.
Yeah, if people see you with that, they're going to think, this guy's got some money, I'm going to jump him.
It's the only piece of thing I have, yeah.
Well, that's interesting. Eric Henning had a good idea. In his notes, I think it was called TIPS, T-I-P-S, that he was giving some different ideas, different tips about, he had some not only tricks in there, but one of the things had to do with shoes. Yeah. And he was saying that his dad said, if you have $100, spend $99 on your shoes and $1 on food or whatever else. Because the shoes not only are what people are looking at, but also something comfortable. And he had suggested Deer Stag shoes that you can buy. I think Burlington Coat Factory has them or whatever. And they come in different styles. But the most important thing is it not only has arch support, but when you're on the showroom floor on your feet for 8 hours a day, it's hard on your legs.
So hard.
As you know.
Yes.
So a couple different tips. One is have some comfortable shoes that are going to have good support and feel
soft. And you can buy inserts too. Inserts.
Yep, buy inserts as well. And another thing is if you can, for right below your trade show booth where you're standing, is to have that thing that chefs use.
It's so funny you said this is the first show I just did where my company had that prepared for me and they had one. And it's too hard for me to travel with, but they had it. And one of those cooking mats is black.
Yes. It's spongy, kind of.
Mm-hmm. It made all the difference.
When you're standing there.
Yes.
As you know, of course, when people walk into booths, they will have some sort of sponge or something, because that way people subliminally think, well, I'm going to stay here a little bit longer, because they've been walking in the hard concrete in the convention showroom floor. And then when they're invited into the booth, it's like, ooh, this feels kind of good. I'll stay here for a little bit. And the same thing, too, when you're going to be on your feet, if you have some sort of a thing like that you can stand on.
Yes. And I've learned from, of course, because of watching ladies, they always come in tennis shoes and change into their nice shoes once they get to the booth. So I do the same thing. I have a nice pair of black tennis shoes that I can walk comfortably. And then when I get to the booth, I change into my dress shoes. So I'm not tearing them all up, walking the streets of the city, getting, you know, and
stuff
like
really
that.
That's a really
good
idea. Yes. That's a very good idea. I remember, working downtown at lunchtime, you'd see ladies who would be walking and they would have shoes that they weren't wearing at the office.
Yes.
They would change into their tennis shoes to walk to dinner or lunch or someplace, then come back and put on their
their work shoes, basically, back at the office. And so same thing, that you should do that. I think
that's a great idea. That's how I got this solid. And I'm like, that's what I need to be doing. I shouldn't be wearing these shoes, even though, you know, they're really nice. And it's another good thing about a good pair of shoes, too. You take them to a cobbler, that there's still a few of them. They touch them up, you know, a couple times a year for me, do a little thing, and they'll last forever.
Look almost brand new then again.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's a good idea also to get them shined as regularly as you can. Again, some people might think, well, I don't want to have people attracted to my shoes because it might draw attention away from me. I think that I disagree because it's the overall look.
Correct.
You know.
Yeah. You know, I like that feeling of, and I want to be better dressed than my people in my booth, too.
Yeah. Exactly. Right. Well, going back to what Terry Seabrook was saying, is not only do I want to make sure that I am dressing better and looking good, but I feel good. If I'm wearing something that I know I have spent $1,000 on this suit or whatever, I feel I'm going to do a better show because I need to deliver what I'm looking like.
Yes.
You know,
I agree. I totally agree. I mean, again, you don't have to jump out right away, but you'll see every time you get a little better suit and a little better suit and then you get it tailored, when you start getting those compliments stuff, you realize, why did it take me so long just to do that investment over a trick? You know, we always worry about the next trick. Let's get the next electronic
thing.
Grail. Let's get the next buzzing thing, you know, and spend the same kind of money where you could have your whole suit, your whole wardrobe in one suit, and nice pair of shoes.
Yeah.
And you're going to stand out from the rest of the entertainers.
How much time do you take to customize your presentation?
Okay, well, I'm getting so much better that I would almost call my act somewhat plug and play. Mm. I can take certain props, and I can't do every trick with every company, but I have my main 10 tricks that I know I can rotate and pretty much change it within a day, the information. I'm just going to do one of my basic ones that's been around for years. Tons of entertainers have done Professor's Nightmare because it's so easy. Three items, you know.
Three ropes.
It could be anything from service, support, security. Those are the three things, and we do them all equally and evenly, you know. So any kind of company is pretty easy to tie in. Mm-hmm. A Professor's Nightmare, if I have to, on the fly. I do Giovanni's Pennies a lot in my trade shows. Mm-hmm. And I'll say, this is very important data. Put it in the thing. Move it around. Wait, there's 10 rows. Wait, what happened to that penny? Oh, you know, if you had our software, you'd know exactly where that data is. So it's pretty easy now for me to know what depends on what the company is, what tricks out of my trade show repertoire are going to be the ones for that week. Now, some will get pulled out because they won't fit the theme, you know. So I have my trade show case, and it all, you know, every time I come home, I already reset it for whenever I have the next show, as far as, you know, all the gimmicks, everything, so I don't have to worry. So that's the first thing I do. Unless I, you know, except going to bed. But the next morning, first thing I do is I reorganize my trade showcase and put it in my room so I can grab it and go, and I don't have to stress out a day or two before the show.
Yeah, I had a time or two in which I've started to do something that I spent a lot of time preparing. Once I got to the show, I realized it's not going over as well as what I thought it was going
to. That's happened to me before, too. Yes.
That's frustrating.
Yes, where I thought I've customized or created a trick just for them, and then that's not... It's the stuff that I've always been doing. I think it's because we're oozing confidence with what we do, though,
You
know, you lose a little bit when you're trying to put something new in a trade show.
Right.
So,
speaking about trade shows, then, Sue, have you seen a change? Now, let me just kind of back up to begin with. I suspect you were probably not doing trade shows pre 9/11. You're a young man. I doubt that you were doing things back in 2000.
No, 9/11, I was actually at Disney. At that point, I was performing for Disney.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you weren't actually behind the booth or anything at that point?
No.
Because I had talked with some people who had said, many trade show guys saying that was pretty much the death of trade shows for a long time, and it's taken a long time for that to kind of come back slowly, and may not even today be where it was back then. My point being is, for those who might be discouraged thinking, well, is there any market in trade shows? The answer would be yes. And you're proof of that from the standpoint that you got started post 9/11.
Yes.
Basically.
Yes, I did. I didn't, to be honest, I didn't think I was a trade show guy. Mm-hmm. You know, you kind of look at those guys a little differently. You know, they're learning a lot of material. They're picking the right material so people stick around the booth. Mm-hmm. I mean, it is a lot of work. There's no getting around, and you know how many hours and the time, and you're redoing. It's not, a lot of guys think, oh, I love doing magic. I'd love doing magic for 8 hours in a booth.
Yeah.
You're not doing magic you love. You're doing magic that sells the product. So a lot of the tricks I would not brag about that I'm necessarily doing, because you wouldn't think like that's the trick. Well, it's because it ties in with the company, and then I can do the pitch for the company.
That's true, which goes to the point of what some magicians think, well, I would like to get in the trade shows because I'm a good magician.
Yeah.
No, you have to be a good businessman.
Correct.
And be able to be a good presenter and focus more on the presentation than you are on the trick, because they're not hiring you to be a magician. They're hiring you to stop people.
Yeah, you basically, more than once, I'm sure this happened to you before, Scott, going to the shows, they'll go, wow, you know our product so good, you should just come work for us. You could just sell our product, you know, our software, no problem. Mm-hmm. Oh, well, thank you, you know.
Yeah, I often have had similar things happen, which that like a president or vice president say, you know more about our product than our salesman.
Yes.
Or obviously, I'm sure as you've had people, after you're pitching that, they'll ask you a little bit more detail and saying, well, you need to talk to Sally over here.
Yeah,
you know,
that's when I go, more. I need backup. Yeah, that's what, yeah, when they ask the hard questions, I'm like, you know what? Sally over here is really our expert in that category. She can help you out. Pawn them off real quick.
Right. You know? And then they say, but don't you work for the company?
Yeah.
Well, I get today I had to do.
Yes, exactly. So are you, do you work for the company and you just happen to do good tricks, or do they bring you in? And you know, you always wonder like, what line should I say? But I'm like, I'm always honest, you know, they just,
I'm a hired gun. Yeah.
Yep.
Kind of thing. Yeah. So, yeah. So, well, I work for them this week.
Yes.
As far as trying to find those markets, that is, I think, a hard thing then, too. I had once wanted to go using a personal assistant, and they have this thing, I think, My Man in India or something like that. There are different kinds of websites where you can go, and there are people in other countries who will actually, while you're sleeping, they're working, and they'll say they can go through and sort through the internet. And for an example, let's say the George Brown Convention Center there in Houston, saying, okay, here are all the conventions going to be coming, and then have someone to actually go and find out not only about the conventions, but then who are the companies that are going to be showing at this convention, and then to go dig deeper and to contact those companies and find out who the person is to try to set up an appointment. So they do all of that. I mean, there's a lot of work. I don't know. Yeah. That could be a reason why there are so few trade show magicians, because of the work it takes to get the work.
Yeah. I found is for me, what works best is just proving myself on the trade show floor, and every other booth comes over and goes, they can do the card like secretly. They always think it's like some underground thing. Can you work for other companies? I go, I can work for whoever hires me, but at this particular show, I'll probably be working for them next year. But if you have a different show that's not this one, yes, I can come work for you. So it seems like trade show work breeds more trade show work.
Very good point. And in fact, just happened to me just the last trade show I was doing. I was doing something, and this guy who was at the very next booth came over and said, I've seen some magicians work before. He said, I thought you were just going to do tricks, but he said, you're actually a salesman. You're tying in the companies and da, 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 da. And he said, I didn't know that you guys do that. I thought you'd just be doing card tricks. He said, we'd like to get back in touch with you too. So you're right. Business begets business.
Yes. And if you're smart on your lunchtime break after you're done eating, I always like to don't go down a couple aisles and see if there's somebody says, you know, we are the magic of, you know, whatever. If I see that on their logo, sometimes I'll then approach them and go, hey, just so you know, I'm working the booth over here and I see your theme is magic or gambling or mystery. You look for those words, you know, and I'll see that on their advertisement and I'll go, you know what? I'd be a good fit. You should come see me at booth 1412.
Yeah.
You know, and then once they see it, then like, yeah, you would be a good fit. Because I think it's easy for them to understand it when they see it over. We don't do, I got to be honest, we haven't done any direct calls for trade show work directly to companies, because it's a hard thing to try to explain to a magician in the booth. Oh, that seems kiddie. But when they see it,
Precisely. I think whenever you're trying to make a cold call, if you will, and they don't understand what magic is, I similarly had a situation in which someone liked me, but they were not in the position of hiring, but they were in the position of recommending.
Right.
And so they got the right people together, and I was in the room then with this guy. So it was kind of like the thing, you know, where their arms are crossed to begin with, but by the end they were signing the contract.
Yeah.
You know,
I get this a lot. There'll be one salesman will come up to me and go, by the end of the first day, they go, just so you know, when I heard we were going to have you, I was against it in the meeting. I was like, this is dumb idea. We should have coffee. We should give coffee away. And then they go, but now I get it. Oh my gosh. You're bringing them in. You're giving them the information. And I don't know about you, but I always keep a scanner too, because I want those people to see what numbers I get.
That's a good idea.
Yeah. So I would say, could I make sure I have a scanner? Because when I'm done, I'm scanning with them. Sometimes they're too busy and I scan my whole group. So I can show them. I'm bringing in
great idea.
A couple thousand leads
the more than what they would have.
Yes. And then they look at their other salesman. Well, Jimmy's got 28 leads. The magician's got 450 leads already today. You know, I've already proved my return on investment.
What a fantastic idea. Yeah. I don't know why I hadn't thought of that. Yeah. So I hope everybody's listening who does this kind of thing takes that tip. You may guys already do that, but I'm just maybe the last on board.
No, I don't think so. I watch a lot of guys. They just pass them off where I want to be in control of the scanner too.
Well, you know, funny thing, I guess, what you could do with the scanner now, how the people are taking temperatures, you know, pointing at their forehead.
Yes.
Kind of making a joke like that, saying, oh, you're okay. Come a little bit closer. By the way, let me scan your
badge. Yes, exactly. You know? We can do that. Yeah, that's good. That's really good. I like that.
So you can, they're used to that. They know what's going to be happening as well. That is funny. Well, you said you worked at Disney before. I had forgotten that you were Disney. You weren't working at the Magic Shop, were you?
No. The Magic Shop was long gone. I did two different things. I started out doing the Wonders Pavilion. It was at Epcot, and we had this thing called Wonders of Life show, and I was Dr. Eric, and then there was a juggler, Danny DeVante, and he was Nurse Danny, and there we go. The joke was male nurse, and he had sound effects, male nurse. He's like, you go, hey, Nurse Danny, that's male Nurse Danny, you know. And so we had this whole thing that we did, and then I moved from there. They put me into the boardwalk at Disney, so I was doing 4 20-minute shows a night outside in the evening outside the Disney boardwalk, and then I stayed there, but then I also filled in. I was like the fill-in for like Terry Ward in the horseshoe. So when Terry was gone, I got to do that a few times. I got to be the fill-in. I was Ramblin' Rick. Rick.
Yep. Did you wear a costume?
Yep. The cowboy thing and the whole day. I did Sidekick, which fit in good theme, but we still didn't want to use a gun with the kids.
What'd you do?
I did a banana, and we made all kinds of jokes like, oh, that's not very appealing. Hey, be careful, it's loaded with potassium. Yeah. And then the music people, wah, wah, you know, the band people would make funny
rip
noises.
Shots,
Yes. And then 9 times out of 10, the kid wouldn't understand because of the shape of it, not uses a gun. They'd throw it like a boomerang, and it would go flying across stage. I go, no, it's the Old West, not the Outback. And then I go, get the banana. You're gonna fire. And so, yeah, I did a Sidekick and Cut and Restore Rope and one other thing I can't remember. And that would be my whole set, you know.
I'd used a bang wand. So that way that it made the noise in order to trigger that. Of course, with the Jumbo Sidekick, you have remote control without having a noise. But that is pretty funny.
Yeah. You know, I dress them in holster, and I put a big cowboy hat that's too big that would slide down over their head. And
man, you must have made a 20-minute routine out of that.
Yes, I did. They said kind of make it a tight routines, and then boom. And the odd thing there was the back door was open, so you'd see people walking, going to rides as you're performing. Mm-hmm. So you'd be performing at the horseshoe, but all you'd see is traffic, you know, of everybody walking. It was kind of, you had to get over that. It was weird the first few times.
Was that the same horseshoe where Bev Bergeron used to walk?
Yes. Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay. And
the
then
Diamond Horseshoe.
And so when he left, is that when Terry came?
Yeah. Then I think before Terry, I believe it was Chris Blackmore.
Okay.
For years. Mm-hmm. And then Chris left, and I believe it was Terry Ward and John Eakin. And then they needed another fill-in for dates, and I just got to do the fill-in, like just, you know, here and there. But it was, wow, what an experience to say you got to work that stage and, you know.
Well, and Terry's been, I was going to say, continuing to do that, but I don't think he does that any longer.
No. I think after the whole COVID thing, all the a lot of the performers were let go.
I was going to say about 2 years ago. That was whenever that, but he'd done tens of thousands of performances.
Hundreds of thousands.
Okay.
Yeah.
I've seen him perform a few times, not at Disney, but I've seen him like at some Genie convention, a few others.
Yeah, he's amazing. If you guys haven't seen him, it's worth finding him or getting his DVD set just to watch.
Oh, he has a DVD set?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. The Art of Play, it's called.
Okay.
It is amazing. If you want to see a guy hustle in the streets, and they actually have real footage of him out in Disney performing, and then he breaks down all his material that he does and why he does it, It's a workshop.
So he was doing street magic as well as the horseshoe?
Yes. Okay. Yeah. So he would go out at Hollywood Studios, and they have him set up there, and he did street magic, did the three shells, and just great magic. He's one of the best performers in Orlando.
So being employed by Disney, did it include, I mean, the whole package as far as like a regular employee would get, as far as insurance benefits, et cetera? Or is it just like a contract?
No, it's more like a contract. I was an independent contractor.
So you just get X dollars and you're on your
own. Yes, exactly. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, you had the option of going the other way, but then you're getting paid per hour compared to, it seemed like our thoughts were getting the more money up front made more sense. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. So that's why you can also get whatever kind of insurance benefits that you want outside of that then. Yeah. But they pay you a high dollar in order to make up for that. And you can work kind of whenever. Did you set your own hours back then?
No, they would give you a schedule of, you know, these 3 days are yours at the boardwalk and so that and stuff like that. So it was always a set schedule. You knew in advance. And if you needed a change, you could just find another one of those performers that were also contracted there. You could rotate dates as long as you had somebody else.
Took the words out of my mouth. I was going to ask you, like, if you were sick or you wanted, you got another job or someplace else for
as long travel. As you had the other performer, you were allowed to rotate.
So there was a group of approved vendors.
I think six of us. Yeah.
Yeah. And you did that for how many years?
5-6 years, something like that.
How many shows would you say that you got in during that time?
Boy, you know, I don't know, but here's what's funny. About 6 months ago, I got a TikTok forward to me. Yeah. And they go, is this you? And somebody had some old footage of me performing Hobson's Balloon Bag on TikTok. Oh. And it got like millions of views. And I'm like, yeah, that's me. And then now she's like an adult. You know, it's kind of crazy. Uh-huh. Like, it's weird seeing that's an adult now. And she was like, I had her up on stage or, you know, at the boardwalk.
Well, going back full circle to doing birthday parties, you know, when you've done, let's say, a bat mitzvah or bar mitzvah or something, and then you end up doing it for their children's bat mitzvah.
Yes, I know. it's always crazy. Like, I don't need to know that. Just hire me. I don't need to know.
Make me feel old. Yeah, that's right. Oh, I had so much fun. I thought if I could ever be in the opportunity to hire you, I would. And when I had my child.
Yeah.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah.
Had you worked restaurants?
You know what? It's funny. When I first moved to Florida
from
Wisconsin, like Geneva, Wisconsin, I was working a couple restaurants just to get my foot in the door.
Yeah.
And, you know, they always had those limited budgets, but we were pretty good. My wife's pretty much my manager, so she's really good about negotiating. Mm-hmm. So I don't remember what I got paid. So I'm going to give you a rent because I really can't remember. Let's say I got $100 a night.
Okay.
But to make it worth more, then we'd also get, you know, $50 worth of
food voucher
stuff. And then we'd go out every month for a nice steak and drinks. And, and the managers always treat us good. Like, you know, I know no desserts aren't supposed to be out. Just get a dessert, you know, whatever. So it was a good way to open up doors to start getting corporate work when I first moved to Florida, you know. I was in the Key Largo for 2.5 years. I worked their restaurant, and they actually put me on their property. I got to live on property for 2.5 years at the Mirror at Key Largo. Yeah.
In the Keys.
Yeah,
in
the first Key. Yeah, Key
Largo. How'd you find that?
Well, a ventriloquist friend of mine was doing a comedy club, stayed the night there, and somehow the manager goes, oh, are you a magician? He goes, because he had the case?
Yeah.
He goes, no, I'm a ventriloquist. He goes, oh, I don't like those. He goes, yeah. He goes, I've always wanted to have an in-house magician. Mm-hmm. It's kind of always been my thing. I love magic. And he goes, my buddy Eric wants to get out of Wisconsin. He hates the cold. He goes, well, tell him to give me a call next week. And I called him, and the guy goes, well, can you come down for an interview? I'm like, it's the Keys, but I really want to hear what this guy has to say. So I drove down, you know, a couple days took me to get down, and he goes, okay, here's the deal. I want an in-house magician. So we have this studio apartment above the conference center. So you can have that. We need you to work Wednesday, 2 hours on Wednesday, 2 on Friday, 2 on Saturday, and 2 on Sunday. Live on property. You can get employee meals, which are like $2.50, you know, like what, you know.
Off the menu.
Yeah, for off the menu. So that's what I'm only paying, you know. And then they paid me a few $100s a week. They go, what do you think? I'm like, yes, you know. And you're making tons of tips because those guys that came to the Keys were always lawyers and doctors that love scuba diving. So they'd come down, go scuba diving all day, have drinks at night, and they would just throw money at you. I always would shake somebody's hand. I always would think when I got the Chicago handshake that I was getting a 10 sometimes. So I'd do like one thing. I'd get home and like, it's 100. I should have spent a little more time at that table, you know? And you never know what you get. Like one time they were filming the movie Heartbreakers down there and Ray Liotta was there. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, none of those guys ever had money. So I did their table. He was laughing. He says, oh, I did some jokes. And he goes, that's funny. And I go, what, funny like a clown? You know? and they all got there. The guys all looked at Ray to make sure he laughed first, you know? And then he did that whole pat down, like he has nothing on him, you know? Right. And the guys are like, the producers or whoever was like, Ray, we got the kid.
We got it.
Ray gets up. They folded all up hands to me. The waitress attacked me. They're like, we need to know. We saw that handshake. We opened up, it was like $3. I go, yeah, they took care of me. So you just never know.
Yeah, you don't. You never know as far as being a restaurant magician. I assume you've done cruises since you're out in Florida.
I did do cruises. I did not like those. I was one of the few guys who did not. I didn't like being away from the family, even at 2 weeks at a time.
Yeah.
you know what it was? I had one show where it was really rocky, and I had to keep putting my hand on a stool to balance myself.
Wow.
And I just could not get my beat. Mm-hmm. And I felt, you know what? I don't like not being on. And I felt mm-hmm. that was throwing me off. And I was like, I told my wife, I go, I know you really like the money, but I really don't want to do cruises anymore. She goes, right. She goes, no, I understand. We'll just keep pushing corporate work. I mean, the funnest is really strolling magic, because you can, once you're to a certain level, you pick what you want to do. You can pick your favorite things. You can put some new stuff in. You go to a group. You keep working till a table loves you. If they don't love you when you're strolling, you move on quicker. The people that love you, you can stay longer. So I think that's the easiest part of my job. I feel is strolling magic. The best, you know, a corporate doing that is great. Do an hour after dinner show. You do a show, pack them, go. But you have a lot of things that can, you know, dance floor death, bad lighting. Mm-hmm. So you're fighting a lot of things in that market, you know? And then, of course, trade shows are those long 8-hour days of just grueling, of saying the same material over and over again. So, but it's got its pluses as far as you travel all over the place. You mm-hmm. get a really good paycheck at the end of every day. I mean, it is the best money.
Nice hotels.
Hotels that I would never pay to stay in.
Yeah.
That, you know, that are on the top 10 list of mm-hmm. in America I've stayed at, you know, pretty much every single one on that list. I saw one day in a book. I'm like, yep, Ben stayed there. I'm looking at the price. I'm like, yeah, I would never pay that, you know? So,
well, at the end of the day, also, I don't like really to work a hospitality suite. Cause I go say, hey, can you come over? And then in the evening, we're going to be having, you know, whatever. It's like, oh, you just spent 8 hours, but they got special customers and you got to get that fresh look again. Yes, it's like, it's like you're starting all over, you know,
and
it's exciting.
And noisy and all that kind of stuff. I'm curious, what is your favorite to do, Scott?
I honestly, it's trade shows. And I'll tell you exactly why. It's because I love the challenge of creativity.
Yeah.
It forces me to not be comfortable and fall back into something that is easy to do. I've got my A and B show. If I'm going to be doing a stage show, you know, for a dinner banquet or whatever, I love doing strolling magic during cocktail parties. And like with restaurants and cocktail parties, the hardest thing for magicians is to A, approach a group, and B, to leave a group.
Yes.
Because after you've approached it and you've won them over, it's hard to go to the next one because they're digging it and having fun.
And you got
to
start
all over.
Yeah.
It's over and over and over. And that really doesn't bother me so much. But I, again, like trade shows because I have to learn about their product. I learn something new about some company or industry I may not have had any interest or knowledge about until I started getting into their website and everything. But I really then like figuring, okay, with my magic knowledge over the decades, what can I pull from that will fit to sell this product's whatever it is.
Right.
And of course, first thing you have to find out is what is it that they're wanting to convey? Are they trying to get more customers? Are they trying to roll out a new product?
Right.
There are so many things, so many questions you need to know about them rather than them thinking, oh, we just wanted to have a magician. Once they've kind of sold on that idea, well, you're not getting just a magician, you're getting a salesman. And that's what because I've had people who have said, well, we want a magician because the theme of the conference is magic, and so we want to have a magician. Well, yeah, but I can also do this.
Right.
And say, well, that's fine, but we want you to do some magic. But then after you start doing some other stuff, they say, oh, we didn't realize that you actually, like I was just talking about, realize that you actually can sell the thing. So I like the idea of trying to be creative. It forces me to get out of it's not a comfort zone. My comfort zone is when I really do have to get down and think and try to create something. Right. But it does force me to learn new things or apply old knowledge to new wisdom, if you would.
And do you notice, too, that because we've worked for so many different companies, it opens up a door for conversation. You'll hear somebody say something about...
Yes, makes you a much more interesting person, doesn't it?
Yeah, because they'll say, I just got in with the cattle show, you know? So now I know all about antibiotics. If anybody's talking about cattle next to me on a train or something, I can say, oh, well, yeah, have you tried, you know, and they're like, oh, how do you know that? You know, I get that a lot. Like,
that's true.
I just talked to somebody the other day about a GPS system that he puts them in trucks. I go, oh, are you using GPS Insight? Or and like, how do you know all that? I go, well, because I worked for that company before, so I can tell you all about the product, you know?
Yeah, I think it not only makes you a more interesting person, but also it does come in handy, I think, in certain places at certain times.
Yes.
That you kind of draw on that. So do you feel like you found your niche, I guess? That's what you really...
I'm really, I was nervous because, you know, there's been heavy hitters in this market a long time.
Sure.
You know, and so I was the little fish for a long time, and I felt like, boy, these guys are the real deal. Should I even be in this market. But, you know, they've really taken me underneath their wing. Both Scott Tokar and David Harris give me a lot of their fill-in work. Mm-hmm. So that's nice because they're now the people I look up to are trusting me when they can't do it too. Mm-hmm. So that made me feel like, okay, I do this well. You know, and people enjoy me.
And you've proven yourself.
Yes, proven myself. And you know, the clients, every time they're like, when they say, you went above and beyond, we can't believe we had that many customers come to our booth or,
right.
You know, we sometimes we were just sitting back on the stools doing nothing. I saw that. yeah. Because you were doing it all. We didn't need to do anything.
Yeah. When I was doing a show in Canada one time, I had already done some things for this company before in the U.S. They said, well, we got this thing up in Calgary. And so the guys who were running the one in Calgary said, well, we've always done this other thing. Said, tell you what, since you're foisting this magician on us, said, let's do it our way to begin with. And then we will do it the second day, starting with him, and to kind of compare and see what kind of crowd and everything works. Within the first 2 hours, they said, look, this guy's already doubled what we had yesterday.
Yeah, that's awesome. I love it.
It's like we need him more often.
Yeah.
And I'm not touting my own horn. I'm just saying that is what, if you have a magician knows what they're doing.
If they know what they're doing, yes.
Yeah, to get them. Well, going back again to hospitality suites, I don't find a lot of companies are doing hospitality suites like they used to do. And I'm saying used to in the 80s and 90s. I mean, I wasn't doing a lot of shows back then as far as trade shows, but I had attended conferences where there were things up in their suites where they would have
cocktails and appetizers. Yes.
Right.
I've done several of those. I find them, they're getting less and less, or when they're doing them, they're more doing company dinners.
Correct.
So
they'll be going over to some steak joint or something.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So every once in a while, they'll say to me, hey, you know, we have to pay for this anyway. Do you want to come out for dinner with us? Mm-hmm. And I got to be honest, back in the day, I used to say no a lot. I say no because I want the separation. I don't want to lose the, I always call it the Michael Jackson effect. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, Michael Jackson was the greatest until he started talking and gave up too much information. Then you're like, what?
Yeah.
You know, I don't want that to happen to me. Well, I would do a couple shows. And I'm like, man, I killed it. Why didn't I get, they didn't rehire me. I found out once I started accepting those dinners and having a couple things in my pocket and do a little thing at the end of the table, I'd tell the boss, hey, I'll warm everybody up before dinner. Now they're your buddy. They want you at the booth not only
because
you're good.
Because you're a friend.
Because now you're a friend. Yeah. A lot of my companies, they call us like the friends. All right, Eric, blah, blah, blah. And don't forget, don't fly them out. But tell Kim, you're not flying them out that night because the last night we're all going out and I want Eric with us and we have some important clients and, you know, he's a good smoozer. And so it's like, okay. And then she goes, now remember, you got to get in that flight. Don't stay out too late. Yeah. You know,
I love it when I get Christmas cards from clients.
Yes.
You know, it's like they are friends.
Yeah, they are
friends. And friends like to do business with friends. And so you got a very good point. If you're doing them a favor, it's kind of like, yeah, I mean, you say doing a favor. I mean, they're buying you a very expensive dinner.
Very expensive. Yeah. I'm sure you have two heads. You look at the menu, you're like, $175 for a steak. Here's my system too. I wait for the boss. I see what he's doing. If he gets the burger, when it comes around, I'm getting the burger.
That's a good point.
And then if he gets the highest steak, I'll still go below that a little bit. I'll go the in between, you know, but that's my system. Like, okay, what's the boss doing? You know?
You just got to watch what everyone else is doing and go along with it. You know,
correct.
Go with the flow.
Yeah, I go guess. With the flow. Yep. And that's what I like to do.
Yeah, so to speak. Well, I mentioned a while ago also about Wizards. I know as we speak now that Wizards has been closed for a while.
Yeah, almost 2 years.
Almost
now,
2 years.
Yeah, because everything. Yeah.
Now, well, that would, and when we talk about that, it is not really a proper theater in and of itself.
No, it's something. It was just a room in a hotel that we rented and set up every week for 10 years.
Now, in your situation, did you have the arrangement with the hotel so you had the same room on a regular basis?
Yeah, it was pretty much, yes.
Okay.
In fact, if I probably could have, except every once in a while they would use it for something. If they didn't use it at all, they pretty much didn't use it. We would talk a few times, like they'd say, hey, listen, we got nothing on the books. If you want to just leave your stuff set up, but mostly we'd pack it up every night. Part of the deal was we also had our own closet and all that. So everything went into there. We get there, you know, a couple hours early, set it all up. The magicians in Orlando were great. They started watching how we packed down. Half the time I'd turn around, everybody had it packed down, you know, like for us, it was a great family as far as everybody who supported us.
Kind
for
of pack small,
years.
Play big kind of thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It was amazing. I had some of the best in the world. Everything from Jonathan Pendragon to Shuta Gawa to Shim Lim. I mean, you name it, they did my room. It was amazing.
Well, it was mostly for people who were coming through Florida because I know they were like going to cruises or someplace, you know.
Correct. That's how I get them, or corporate events or trade shows.
Yeah.
And the guys go, hey,
I'm in town.
I'll pick up that Monday, and I'm like, yeah, that, and it just started flowing like mm-hmm. that. It was pretty cool.
And there's some guys, like, I booked some lectures through you as well, because yeah. afterwards they'd stick around and do lectures.
Yep, tons of them. And that was the only thing that was different. Remember, you would say, hey, can this guy lecture? And I said, well, the deal is we always do a show. So if they can do a show, and only a few times guys said, well, I don't want to carry
right.
my show stuff yeah. too. But most of the time, they would do both. And remember their faces. They would always be like, wow, I'm not used to doing a show first, whatever. I go, you'll sell more stuff, because now your lecture's even easier, because you already demoed it
yeah.
live and how it really feels. And I had more times where guys go, I can't believe how much money I made out of this little room in sales. It always made me feel good, you know, like yeah. Eric, it was really worth coming here.
Yeah. So. And the reason I want to talk about this then a little bit has to do with people who might be looking for a venue of their own yeah. or something they might want to replicate
yes.
as far as getting a theater.
Yeah.
Did you have several places to approach? Let me back up again to say you are in a tourist heavy community.
Yes. Yes.
So that wouldn't necessarily work in Ames, Iowa or something.
Well,
but
it's funny you say that, because I've helped people over the years and people would say that, like, they want to be in Iowa or something. I go, well, here's the thing. You can try to open a show there. The advantage I have is there's different guys coming in all the time to Orlando. Mm. So I have that advantage as
big turnover talent.
Big turnover. So as far as acts.
Talent.
Yeah. Right. So I'd have a bunch of different talent. So I could have a lot of the same people come back. You're not going to get the same kind of pool coming through Iowa, Idaho, mm-hmm. you know, middle of Wisconsin, whatever. So if the show doesn't change, once people see the show, a lot of them go like, well, I've already seen the show, you right. know? So the advantage we had was we'd have at least 20% of our audience was there almost every single week. That we already had a base. Like they wanted to see.
Cause they knew you were going to be bringing in someone different
yes.
the next week.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So that base right there was made it so solid. And then it was easy to sell the rest of the seats. It was only 50 seats. So I can brag. I sold out pretty much every night of 10 years.
And did you charge like $20 or how?
Yeah, $20, mm-hmm. you know, it was real, real inexpensive. You get mm-hmm. a free bag of popcorn and see some of the best close-up parlor guys in the world.
Yeah. You know? Well, that's true. You did. And in approaching the restaurant or the venue,
yeah.
that was the other thing. You said this was in a hotel?
Yes, in a hotel.
Okay,
yes.
So they had a banquet room basically they put aside for you.
Yeah, what it was actually used to be a kids club, mm. all right? And they said after 9/11, nobody wanted to drop their kids off. So they just didn't reopen it after that. And they were using it for a meeting room or whatever. It was a separate little building next to the pool.
Yeah.
So what happened was we were looking for a venue. We knew we were going to get a venue. So we just started going up and down 192, because I like that area, because it's in between everybody, from people here from Lakeland, from Tampa, from, you know, parts of Orlando. I wanted as close that everybody could get to, right?
Yeah.
So we'd walk through hotels and just stuff didn't have a vibe. You know, like, oh, it's just the room's too plain or the room's too this. And we opened up that, it looked like a little castle. So I'm like, oh my God, it's got the feel.
Yeah.
Right. So we walk in, but the room was just a little too small for us, to be honest. We were like, ugh, this is just a little too small. We start walking out and a manager goes, excuse me, can we help you? And my wife goes, yeah, my husband's looking for to put a magic venue, but you know, we haven't really found the spot yet. He goes, well, you won't believe it. The general manager's here today and he's got nothing on the books. It'd be the perfect day to talk to him.
You live a charm life.
Yes. Huh? Yeah. So I'm like, we were still thinking, our heads were kind of whispering, it's still kind of small, but let's just go in there. So we go to the guy. We're like, yeah, we'd like to do this magic venue once a week. He goes, well, what's this going to cost me? Then my light bulb went off at that point. I'm like, wait, cost you? It's not going to cost you anything. So I already knew I was over one of the humps at that moment.
Right.
And we figured we could figure out how to
make it work.
And he goes, I'll tell you what. Can you start next week? I go, no, whoa, we got to give us a little. He was so excited. I'm like, well, you got to give us at least 2 weeks because we got to promote and figure out how we're going to decorate and all that kind of
right.
stuff, you know? And he goes, all right, 2 weeks, let's see. And he goes, if it doesn't work out, no hard feelings.
Yeah.
And I go, okay. And boom, right away, we just started filling people and getting hotel guests. And then afterwards, he loved it because they'd make money on the food and the bar afterwards. Everybody go to the tiki bar afterwards.
Right.
All the magicians would hang out there. Regular people would hang out there. And he goes there on a Monday. They went from like $10 to a couple thousand dollars.
Wow.
Every Monday.
Did they promote that internally also?
Yeah,
and to tours?
I did a lot of stuff myself. Like I would do the posters and have them put them up. But what works out good is you find a place that also is already tied in. They already pay their money to the, why is my mind going? Like the
tourism.
The tourism. Yeah. They're already part of that tourism board. Mm-hmm. So you get grandfathered in because I had a show there. So mm-hmm. I just had to drop off my stuff and I go, oh, this is at the Cerro Lago. Oh, they're a great supporter. And they'd be on the tourism board's
yeah.
table and
right.
stuff like that. So
Yeah, I was when we were working with the hotel, they didn't promote that very well at all. Yeah. And in fact, we didn't have a regular room because at the hotel, they would have a banquet room, but they were always renting out to someplace else. But we wouldn't know until the month of they will give it to us. Otherwise, if we want to pay full price for like $1,200, otherwise.
Then what's the point?
Yeah. No. So then we're saying, okay, well, for $200, we'll take it.
Yes.
But we couldn't promote it until we knew we had what date that was going to be in that month. It may be the third Friday or maybe the second Friday. Yeah. So it was a problem of trying to have the continuity. And it sounds like yours, you had good continuity. You had people who were coming back. Now, also, you said 20% of the people were repeat people, obviously, who were locals.
Did
you have a lot of other people who were outside then from the just tourists who were at the hotel?
Oh, yeah. I would get a lot of, not as much from the hotel, but people at other hotels that just would look up. I was really good at my social media.
Yeah.
So it's still growing, even though I'm not there anymore. We still get calls every single day. That I really knew how to grow that part of it. So it was already organically growing. So if you punch in Magic Show Orlando, Magic Show Florida, it was popping up and be like, oh, let's go check this out. And there wasn't, you would think Orlando would have more magic than what it did.
I'm surprised.
Yeah, it was me and Tony Brent, and that was about it at the Out of Control Magic Show.
Wow. And people who might be interested in trying to create their own restaurants or to own venue, I guess. You can do that.
Yeah, and a restaurant would be a good idea, too, because sometimes those restaurants have, people don't even realize, they have those banquet rooms in the back that are only used certain times. And you can work out a deal with those guys that, hey, I know you have banquets, but let me have it on, every Monday on your dead night. And if they have to rent it out, all you have to do is put sold out. That's what we would do. If the few times in the 10 years, maybe it was four times, maybe five out of 10 years that they needed that for whatever coming into the hotel.
Right.
Then we just put sold out and people just, can't buy any tickets. Wow, they're doing so good. They're sold out. So it's a win-win.
Another thing too, of course, you could tell the restaurant or the hotel, if you can put together a package, let's say like the hotel, if you have a dinner and night package that you can spend the night with your sweetheart. And then the next day or that evening you have dinner or whatever. And the same thing like at a restaurant, if you're going to be going to the restaurant, so this way you're going to be getting free appetizer, with the show or something. You get a show ticket and you get to use this. So you can kind of, it'd be symbiotic, I guess. So they both are win.
Yeah.
It's win-win.
After that, I actually opened another place for a while too. I had Houdini's Hidden Theater up the road.
I remember that.
Yeah. So what I would do, I actually used one of your great photos.
With the martinis.
With the martini. It was so great. So that was my own, because then I started wanting my own show. So then I opened
that up. That didn't last too long ago, did it?
No, the hotel got bought out.
Oh, is that what it was?
Yes. Okay. And so when that happens, they're changing everything. They're going to, it was going to be shut down. And so they said, back in the day, I remember they said, you should try to come back once we've redid everything. But we never did. But it was nice. Nice little parlor room. And they were happy on the food and drink money I was paid. Mm-hmm. Made in the ticket price, everybody got one free drink. So the hotel already knew that they were going to get at least, 50 drinks at night.
Right. Nobody's going to drink just one.
That's what I told them. Yeah. I go, I get the first one. It's on part of the ticket. After that, you guys, and they're like, wow, that's a great idea. Mm-hmm.
Well, going to drinks, by the way, let's get around to bar bets.
Oh, yeah.
So how did that kind of come about? I know that you got some really cool ideas in boxes.
Yes. Okay. So what happened was it was Corona. Right?
Yeah.
And
not the beer, but.
No, right. Exactly. And I kept going, okay, this thing's not ending. I thought it'd be 3 months at the most, like we were told. And my kids, everybody were growing on TikTok and I'm starting to get bored. So I'm looking on TikTok. I'm like, oh, this is pretty entertaining, passing time. And I saw there was already people doing magic on TikTok. So I'm like, okay, what is nobody doing right now? This is how it kind of went on. And I'm like, oh, I'll start doing some bar bets on TikTok.
Yeah.
And it started growing. I know I have some that are like, almost a million views or whatever, which is small now, to be honest. But then when it was growing, it was a big number. Now you can get that in a day.
Were you getting paid?
Not at that point. But then people were like, oh, I want more of this, do more. And it was keeping me sane. So then I'm like, you know what? I looked, I couldn't find a bar bets kit, like a magic kit. I'm like, you know what? We always have books, but there hasn't been like a kit at that moment that I knew of. And I found out later there was one in England that they made, but I found out years later. But
the only book I can think of course, is Diamond Jim's.
Of course, and he's got several. He's
Bamboozlers.
He's the best. Mm-hmm. So I put together this bar bets kit, and I've sold it. It's on Amazon. I've sold it to a lot of alcohol distributing companies.
So they put their logo on it or something?
Yeah, they don't even put their logo. They just either give it for promotionals, like a thank you for buying 10,000 bottles of beer.
Right.
You know, here's a Barbets kit. Mm-hmm. And or some of the sites on some are selling them on their sites too, just as a, you know, glasses, mugs, oh, Barbets kit. You know?
Have you thought about, by the way, going to some of these places like bartending school and have teaching a class?
You know, it's kind of funny. I did. I haven't done yet, but it has been in the back of my head.
Yeah.
I also thought maybe even going to cigar bars and stuff too, and maybe doing a thing where they can have me in for a night.
Yeah.
And I do a little teach everybody some how to get free drinks, mm-hmm. and then here's my kits if you like to buy them afterwards or something like that. You know. But yeah, I've really kind of fell down that rabbit hole, and I really enjoy it. And now I use it a lot when I'm out. How many times have you heard, can you show me a trick, right? And
all the time.
It's so hard to give that perfect trick that are they even going to do it right? Are they going to understand it? What magic do we really want to give up? Maybe right. a secret. So now I teach them basically bar bets, and it's more fun for them than actually learning a magic trick. Oh, I'm going to go do this right now and go get a free drink. And they'll, even at my trade shows now, I'm doing a few bar bets in the booth. And the guys tell me the next day, I got 3 free drinks at the Marriott last night. You were totally worth it, dude. Totally worth it. You know? So
I just had lunch with Jeff Williams yesterday, and he was talking about that very thing, about where he was saying, when you go to tables, look, I can show you just the most amazing magic trick you're going to love and talk about for a long time, or I can teach you a bar bet that you are going to be able to get drinks for the rest of your life for free. Which would you rather see?
Yes, exactly. No, I was surprised how powerful bar bets are. Mm-hmm. People.
What's your favorite?
My favorite is actually kind of a fun one. I like you have a champagne bottle sealed, and mm-hmm. you bet somebody that you can drink out of the champagne bottle without removing the cork or the metal.
Right.
And they look, they can't figure out.
Right.
Cause everyone's has a dimple at the bottom. So you mm-hmm. tip it over,
right.
put whatever you want drink into the end of the bottle, and you're just drinking right out at the bottom
out
end.
Of the bottle.
Yeah. End. And it gets a good laugh. Like, oh,
you got know, me.
Got me. And I'll tell you what, the 52-on-1, I have hundreds of those printed up, and I give them out like water with my information on them.
Oh.
And I go,
this is on the back of your business card?
Or? I'll actually, yeah. It's just a separate card. I'll have to show you afterwards. It's mm-hmm. just a nice printed, card, really nice plastic stock.
Yeah.
So it lasts forever in their wallets. And I'll go, hey, I'm going to show you how to get drinks the rest of your life. And I'll lay on that card. Think of any playing card, any card except for a Joker. Would you be impressed? Would you be so impressed if your card's on there? You'd buy me a drink. And 9 times out of 10, they go, my card's on there. I'll buy you drinks all night long. What was it? 3 of diamonds. Here it is right here. It gets them a good laugh. And I go, no, now keep that in your wallet. And now you got free drinks the rest of your life. So
right. Now you get your drink back by you doing it to someone else.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And I give those out, hundreds of them.
That's a great idea.
Yes.
So in your bar kit, do you have a bunch of those you give, or you just have one?
No, that's in there. The 3.5 of clubs, mm-hmm. you know, that's a great bar bet.
Yep.
The money box, a lot of stuff I've taken that maybe wasn't a bar bet, but I made into a bar bet. So it makes it kind of fresh and different, because it was a trick that not really a trick, because the thing is too, with laymen, they're not performers. Now these, the mm-hmm. bar bets have to be simple, cut and dry, that they can do right out of the box.
Right.
You know, so.
Well, I will also say one of my favorite things I got from you
was
the Blockbuster sticker.
Isn't
that
the best?
I get so much laughter out of that from everybody, not just the people who are around me. When I pull that out, I say, what are you doing with that Blockbuster card?
Yes.
And I say, well, I'm still collecting points from an extra video, VHS rental. But then whenever you see the reaction, of course, from the waiter or the waitress, so this way they're going to say, wait a minute, I don't know if this is going to work or not. I said, well, give it a try.
Yeah. And all my stuff's on my, if you don't mind me plugging the site.
Please do. Yeah, that's why I'm getting.
Okay. Barbetsandtricks.com.
Barbetsandtricks.com.
Yeah. And mm-hmm. then, so people can see what you're talking about. What it is basically a sticker. It's a nice kind of vinyl sticker that you put over your
credit card,
and it's a block. So it looks like a Blockbuster card. So it looks like you're paying with a Blockbuster card, and they freak out. They're like, sir, I think you gave me the wrong card. No, just run it.
See if it works.
And they're like, no, sir. And then you go, I do the same thing. I go, no, I have tons of points for when I used to watch movies all the time. And they look at you all crazy, and they put it through the machine. It does work. Sometimes I'll even say, I don't know about you, I go, you don't have your card anymore? No, I threw it away years ago.
Well, also, whenever they've come back and say, I show this to the rest of the wait staff back there, they always left all this, you know, then as well. But also, I didn't realize until I got this from you, there are 2 different sizes of openings for chips. There's a small and a medium.
Yes.
So they're larger size.
Yes.
So it's kind of, you have to know what size your chip is.
You just have to look. Most of them are small, but you'll see like American Express and some other ones are there's only 2 or 3 that have a bigger chip.
The chip area. Yeah. And the way that's cut out, it's you almost have to draw attention to it when they're talking about it. Otherwise, you don't notice that chip opening as a little window. Right?
No, exactly. I've had people go, dude,
hilarious thing.
Keep my thumb over it. I keep my thumb over it. And I go, you don't need to. They just, the word Blockbuster, and they see it. And they really think you're just trying to pay with a Blockbuster card.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It is the most hilarious thing.
I've sent those all over the world. England, all over.
I am promoting this for you as well, and I want people to go over there to Barbet. What is it?
Barbets and Tricks.
Barbets, and that's AND, not the ampersand.
Yes, thank you, AND.com. Yeah. So, because there's some of my magic products I put out too during the COVID are on there too.
Yeah. So, well, listen, this has been fantastic. Thanks very much, Eric, for your time.
Thank you for having me. Yeah.
I've been wanting to do this for such a long time, and I have such an admirer of the things that you were just a go getter. You and Kimberly have just been doing a lot of great stuff.
Yeah, well,
you
know. The boss likes food and shelter.
So. Of course. Yeah. And so, because my magic podcast is called The Magic Word, what is your philosophy of life? You listen to the podcast.
Listen to the podcast, yes. And you know, I've thought about this several times, you know, because, of course, there's always the family is always great, you know, but I just think everybody should just smile and be happy. You just got to send that energy to everybody because it's getting harder and harder. And
isn't that true?
And I just think we're losing it. I walk down the streets all the time and I just did the like I used to do. Hey, how's it going? Have a great day. And people look at you like they're not used to that anymore.
That's true. So basically, just be happy.
Just be happy. Yeah.
I love it. And I love you too. Thanks a lot.
I love you too.
This is great. So for the Magic Word Podcast, that was Eric Olson. This is Scotty out.
Thank you very much, Eric, for being my guest this week on the Magic Word Podcast. Thanks for your time, your words, and your friendship. It's certainly appreciated by both me and all of the listeners out there then, too. Speaking to each of you listeners, by the way, I want to make sure you get an opportunity to sign up for the contest. We have one more week running of an opportunity to win Seventh Heaven by Lewis Jones that was republished by Charlie Randall with H&R Magic Books, and he has kindly donated 6 copies of that hardcover book to 6 lucky winners. All you have to do is put in your name and your email address, and we'll have a random drawing next week. We'll be announcing that name. Is that right? No. I'll tell you what, we're going to run that one more week. We're going to run that actually 3 weeks. This is just the second week, so we're going to run it through next week as well. And so we'll be announcing that while we are in Austin, Texas for the Magic Collectors Expo. So just because you've got a little bit more time doesn't mean you should delay. Sign up today, and please just one entry per person, not per email, but per person, if you would, in order to give other people the opportunity as well. This is, again, open to everybody in the world. However, because it is a hard copy, it will be shipped, which means there is free domestic postage. But if you live abroad, outside of the domestic U.S. and its territories, then you will be asked to reimburse for the postage, and you'll be notified beforehand as to what it is. If you agree to pay for it, fine. If not, then we'll just draw into the name. Anyhow, thank you again very much for joining us this week, and be sure to subscribe to our pod letter so that you know everything about what's going on from week to week, who's going to be coming on, and who's also been on in the past, so you can go back and listen to the archives. So, until next week, stay well, get booked, and remember, don't worry, be happy. I think I've heard that somewhere before. This is Scotty out.